Thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif, an urban planner, and you're more than welcome to join my big journey of exploring the making of smarter and more livable cities. Please don't forget to follow Urbanistica on the different social media platforms, and also let's connect on LinkedIn. Big thanks to Urbanistica podcast partner, AFRI. AFRI is an international engineering and design company providing sustainable solutions in the fields of energy, industry, and infrastructure. Are you ready for a new episode? Let's go for it. So hello and welcome to Urbanistica podcast, Marie.
Hello, Mustafa. It's so nice being here today.
Welcome.
Thank you for the invitation.
I'm happy that you're here. So tell me, how are you?
I'm quite good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm a little bit sad about not getting better weather and it keeps being cold and we're soon in May.
What can we do?
Yeah. But otherwise.
Yeah. Now we are recording in the end of April.
Yeah.
And still super cold and...
Yeah, 4 degrees in the afternoon is...
It's crazy, no? I still have my winter jacket, you know, for 8 months, something like this.
It just continues, mm-hmm. No ends.
Yeah. So how is it going with work and everything? Is it too much or fine?
I think now I entered in a bit intense period.
Yeah.
But it's just a few weeks and it goes up and down and it's just normal.
Yeah, yeah. But it's under control, hopefully. Yes.
Awesome. Under control.
Yeah. I'm happy. So today we're going to talk about your work and your passion and love to community, building communities and your different activities. So tell me first, where and what do you work with now?
I've been working as an architect and urban designer at BAU for a bit over 2 years. Mm-hmm. And there we work with many complex projects, and my part is working with early stages.
Yeah.
So often I'm a part of the team who does initial research, initial studies, mm-hmm. site visits, when we define the directions of the projects, define initial maybe concept mm-hmm. and visuals. Yeah, and then in that we often try to bring the focus on sustainability, different aspects of it, but of course, focusing on social sustainability, mm. trying to bring some activities or facilities that would encourage people to meet, people to get to know each other and build their own local relations.
Yeah. So it's more about forming the DNA of a place or a building?
Yes, right. Mm. So not just building a building, building a specific building for this area, for these people.
Okay. But isn't how to say, if you make a specific building with a specific use and specific people, which it's more focused about the local area, isn't going to be just fixed and not flexible and adaptable? How to say, because with the future, things change.
Yeah.
If you understand my questions, from fixed DNA for the local community and situation compared to flexibility.
I think the community is not as fixed as we might think. It's always evolving and changing. Mm. People, and nowadays people move around quite often, and whatever you create has to be able to adjust to the new community or new people in this community, new interests or technological changes or climate changes. It's a lot of changes that might happen, and of course the place need to try to be as adaptable as possible.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a contradictory in a sense.
Yeah. Do you feel it's there are a lot of challenges now when you do the research and trying to put together a good concept?
Yeah, I would say each place has its own challenges, but also has its own beauty. So if we try to combine this beauty and the challenges, it always results in something very interesting.
Yeah.
Not always simple.
No.
It's not always easy, but after some time and in a great team, or like talking to different people, you kind of eventually find your way.
Yeah. So I think like this is what we are trained for during the university, and even like start working about like solving problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What are the aspects or challenges that usually follow with every place? Like, I know economy is a challenge, always the budget, but what are like more like common challenges that you see there is a kind of pattern in many places or buildings?
I think it has to do with different groups of population. Mm. Like we are not, like we are sometimes focused on one, but we may live a little bit the other. So it's, we always constantly need to remind yourself that you need to think broader. And it's, as maybe coming back to aspect of adaptability,
yeah.
It has to be like maybe during the day it has one purpose, but then during the evening it has a different purpose, as well as apart from creating nice indoor spaces, the outdoor environment, or like environment that is not behind the paywall, it has also has to be nice and inviting and provoking.
So it's more like to sing different areas with the different people during different time of the day, right?
Yes, exactly. Like, I'll try to map how the space can be like used maximum on different times of the day, and who would be those people.
Yeah.
People who work from like office hours cannot be there during that day.
No.
Yeah.
But is the goal that we should have like diverse people and 24/7 activities, or how you think?
I think when I think about Stockholm, 24/7 may be very ambitious, but definitely like making use of as much as we can, as well as like inviting people. I personally believe when we try to encourage the interconnections or like interactions of people of different generations, like for example, it's probably quite easy to find a similar time when kids and elderly are both available, and maybe combined into activities like use the knowledge of the elderly from their life experience and like how they can pass it to kids, but in a maybe fun way.
So interesting. And tell me like how this started, like your passion to people, community, and like more focus on the social aspect of making places.
I think it started quite long ago from childhood, when I was always like feeling emotional about when something was unjust, like if someone was cheating in a game, or if there was a kid who was left out, I would always feel really bad about it.
Yeah.
And I was trying to, you know, to act on it, but then it evolved and it maybe resulted in my bachelor thesis project, where it started with my own frustration of not being able to influence or even be aware of what's happening in my hometown, and it felt quite sad that I didn't understand how can I engage. So I decided that, oh, why not I design a democracy center where both citizens and the government can come together and have a dialogue, where citizens can learn what can they do, because as I was a regular citizen, I also didn't know what can I do. So that was kind of gradually evolving to that. And then afterwards I moved to Sweden. I think in Sweden an education at KTH kind of continued growing this interest within me.
I think we study the same program, like in KTH, Sustainable Urban Planning and Design.
Yes, exactly.
And I think you also experienced that it's another style of teaching.
Oh, absolutely.
Completely, right? Compared to your bachelor.
Yeah, I did feel total difference in education structure and in a style, how teachers approach their courses and how they have a dialogue with us. It's not it's no longer when a professor just puts the knowledge into you.
Yes.
It's more like we exchange. Like, yeah. And the ideas that I have are valuable as well. They might be wrong.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it's still valuable the way we think and we develop and how we influence each other.
That's true. It's I think this is a big part of what formed us. You're active in your field, I'm active in my field. It's like it was 2 years of conversation, like between students, but also with the professors. It's not like this one way of information. It's more like you do something, you get feedback, and so, like it's more, you're more free to practice your beliefs in architecture or planning.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's more like at first it felt a bit scary that I was so free in doing whatever. I mean, of course we had a direction.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a theme for the project, but then like you can choose the size of your site. You can choose to, to focus on whatever you feel like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can think about what the city will look in 50 years and make a project accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. So I experienced the same, and also like compared to the previous was more like the professor says, you do this and I do what makes professor happy. And this is it. Like, maybe I didn't like the design or the plan or, you know, but I just follow what the professor said and just to get a good mark and move on to the next course.
Yeah. And that shouldn't be the goal.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But also you work on the projects with targeting like communities, building communities like the survival project.
Yeah. Yes, it's a master thesis that I did in collaboration with my friend Lami Ahmed, with who we joined our interests. I was really driven by trying to implement how else can I use my knowledge to empower the community, and I didn't have a specific implementation site. So I was really looking into where can it be applied. But on the other hand, she was really interested in focusing on the Rohingya refugee crisis in Bangladesh.
Okay.
So we kind of came together and found that we can complement each other.
Okay.
And we decided to focus on a newly built settlement on an island that was built specifically for Rohingya refugees.
Okay.
And it's a built from scratch on a newly merged island, and it's a settlement for 100,000 people.
100,000?
Yeah, so it's a huge settlement to build from scratch. So
is it like a temporary or?
The structures are not temporary, but I think the government assumes that the refugees will go back. So this settlement is not supposed to be their permanent
life. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Forever.
Yeah. But at the same time, we were thinking of trying to take a different approach and thinking that, I mean, what is temporary? Is it 50 years? Is it 20 years? Is that really temporary? It's very many years.
Yeah.
We don't know if and when they would be able to go back.
Okay. So the challenge was, or the problem was, is that, or that you wanted to solve is that, there were refugees on an island, 100,000, something like this.
No, the refugees came and they are living in refugee camps.
Yes.
But this settlement is a little bit step ahead from the camp, so it has a bit better conditions.
Okay.
It has better infrastructure.
Mm. And the aim of the government was to move them to the newly built.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm.
But the problem was with quite many aspects, starting from that the people who are refugees, they are coming from mountain areas, so they are not used to living in the conditions where the flooding can occur and monsoon seasons and so on.
Yeah.
So they don't know, they are not used to deal with it.
Okay.
And this island is definitely gonna face that.
Mm.
And that was one aspect. The other aspect is that this island is quite isolated. So that means that if you place only refugees on an island, they have no chance of integrating.
No.
And there is no chance for them to have any kind of income generation or something like that. So we were dealing with quite many complex issues. And on top of that, that island is gonna disappear in 50 years.
Oh no.
Well, by not 50, in 30 years.
Okay.
Because of the sea level rise.
Yeah.
So
you were approaching these challenges from architecture and planning.
Yes.
And how how
what did we do?
Yes, exactly.
So we were thinking that since there's so many resources have already been put into building the settlement, we have to start with using this.
Okay.
So we took as a base the settlement as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to make a model of which buildings we can remove or repurpose so that the environment will become less rigid, but also there would be facilities for the activities, for the community activities, where they would be able to like continue doing what they used to do at home.
Yeah.
Like learning traditional techniques. I think they are quite famous for their weaving techniques from palm trees.
Okay.
From palm tree leaves.
Yeah.
So we were trying to encourage them to keep doing what they can. And maybe that could be a way to start generating some income or some life that is more than just a survival. That's why the project is called Beyond Survival. So we were trying to transform the settlement so that it would be livable, so it would be nice to live, so it can become a home.
Yeah.
At the same time, we were thinking that the strategy should be not only bringing the refugees, but also bringing the local internally displaced people, because then that way they can actually teach each other. The internally displaced people, they deal with a lot of floodings already, so they can teach each other like different techniques and different ways to deal with the challenges.
And how to say, because when we plan, usually we create a scenario for people like your future is gonna be like this. But how do you know information about community, what they love, what they need, their feelings, and so on?
That's a great question, because we were doing it during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So we didn't have an opportunity to actually travel. But we, since my friend is from Bangladesh, we had someone who could do it for us.
So okay, good.
There was a person who could go to refugee camp and talk to some people. So we tried to base it on like real information.
What did they say? Like what were the questions or answers? Like tell us some stories.
I remember an interview with one of the a guy from the community, and I don't remember like the exact words, but I remember how he was talking about like them like coming together. I think this, you know, feeling like we already are far away from your home, but people can still be your home. So that was one of the aspects
that
was very important. But I think the other side of it, where we had an interview with a person who works with the camps, but from the infrastructural part of it. And she was talking about a woman center, like a center for women that they built, and how it kind of lightened up the community.
That's so that beautiful.
That was very inspiring.
How did you approach the challenge of what is temporary home? Like how long, or what is your philosophy about this?
So do you tell in general or
no, like more related to this this project, because you mentioned like the islands will disappear in 30 or 50 years.
Our approach was to whatever we try to break planning into three phases. And whatever we were doing in the phase one, it had to contribute to them being able to move further.
Yeah.
So the idea was that after the time when they they're learning, developing, and building their community on the island, they would be able to move further in the small plug-ins, like a small communities. They would be able to bring their homes. We even designed some like small units that can be built from local materials.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you feel that you brought justice by like architecture and design?
I think in a way, yes, but it would of course be amazing if we could take it further. It's our project was very complex, and it's possibly impossible to have it implemented in the way that we did it, but some parts and pieces of it definitely can be beneficial.
Yeah, because you mentioned like you have this passion of bringing justice and then working with architecture and that serve people. And it's interesting to follow like how you implement this, like, or how you develop your passion. Tell me more like about ASF and your role there and how your story started with them.
Okay, yeah, just to start with, that ASF is Architekter Uten Grenzer. It's a non-profit, non-commercial organization. It's actually international, but in Sweden we also have our own organization.
It's like Architects Without Borders, yes. Is the name in English?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And my journey with them started with actually the master thesis.
Okay.
And one of the jurors who was reviewing our project, she said like, oh, this theme sounds very amazing, and maybe you'd be, like me and my friend would be interested in joining Architects Without Borders because... Okay. It's very kind of in aligned with what we did.
Yeah,
so that's how we initially knew about it and how we started on.
Okay, cool.
But also it was after COVID, just after COVID when we started. So we had to like have a meeting with the previous group who was active before COVID. Because during the COVID, it was a break because it was hard to... maintain everything going. So my friend and I tried to learn from their previous experience, and from there we started off with organizing events because we had this idea of building community here in Stockholm like-minded people who would be interested in doing or like discussing what we are interested as well. So and right now we are maybe around 30 people in the local Stockholm group.
Cool.
And we try to have regular meetings maybe every other month that just internally where we meet and discuss some books that someone found or some articles or different themes or and possibly see what we can do together.
Mm-hmm. How like what is the mission of Architects Without Borders? Like what is the approach?
So the mission is to, I think, to help with some humanitarian goals and sustainability goals from the perspective of architects and engineers or planners. So one of the main part of Architects Without Borders is the projects, which I'm a little bit unsure about the number right now, but there are several projects that are running from Sweden.
Okay.
But it's mostly implemented in different African countries where these projects are aiming to build schools or centers for local people and local children.
Is it like a paid work or like, let's say if I join... and I want also to be part of building school or designing and so on. Is it paid or it's more like volunteering?
Oh, it's completely volunteer organization and it's member driven. So we don't get paid for doing what we are doing. We just kind of find our passion,
yeah.
And this community supports us in a way that they can.
Yeah. How can I join this network? Is it like as an organization or as a like individual person?
There are several ways you can join.
Yeah.
As a person, you can become a member.
Mm.
You can look at our website and there would be an instruction how you can pay the membership fee, and then you'll get a welcome email and more information about our current activities.
Yeah.
But there are other ways to get engaged in the organization. You can apply as a project.
Okay.
So it can be on different stages. It can be an early stage when it's a research stage, and you can apply saying I want to see if I can build a school in that area. And you can apply with a team, or if you don't have enough members in your team, we have a skill bank.
Okay.
So we can see if any of other members can help you contribute to your team.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you're always welcome to donate to any of the projects, because it's always a matter of raising money to be able to make it happen.
True. So like if I take break from my work, I can like travel to a country and be there and work, right? Or like do volunteering work.
I think quite a few projects from time to time, like looking for volunteers who can actually travel and do work on site.
Interesting. Would you like to travel?
Yeah, I think someday I would like to.
Yeah, yeah?
Yeah.
And what is happening here in Stockholm? Like, what are the activities that are going to happen?
We are going to have an event in May.
Okay.
It's going to be a collaboration with an organization that's called Beta Shelters.
Yes. It's famous, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah, I heard about it.
And they are building like housing units, and they pack it into quite flat boxes I think that was one of the challenges, that being able to transport it. So they constantly like improving their structures.
Wow.
So we will have a collaboration with them, and it's going to be a lecture and a visit to their office.
Cool. This is very important. Interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. Yeah, so everyone is welcome to join.
Where do you have like information? Is it like Instagram, Facebook? Where you communicate?
The information is coming in a few days on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Mm. Like on all the social media.
Kind of like everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. And how is it rewarding to be part of this chapter and organization? For your own, for you, Mary?
For me, I think it's a part of that need to do something that would make our society better. So it feels just rewarding to be able to help in the way I can.
Mm.
Yeah, and maybe just important to mention that all of us, we are just doing as much as it's possible.
Yeah.
And if we have a more intense period than someone else is helping to take over what I do, or like we just do what we can. No one is expecting to go over your limits.
No, exactly.
Unless that's what you want, of course.
Yeah. So like, is it not enough to work as an architect? Because there is a question about like, okay, I do my job as an architect from 8 to 5, like a regular job, and that's it. It's enough. But like in your case, no, you want to do more and more and more. It's not enough with daily work.
I think it's just different, because in daily work, I think I'm really lucky to really loving what I'm doing, what I do, and having a very nice environment, very supportive environment, and like ability to work with completely different projects. But at the same time, it's still quite dependent on what work someone else assigns to me.
Mm.
And then in volunteering, I can choose which direction or what do I feel like doing today.
Yeah.
So it's, that's in a way different.
Mm.
Although I do like doing both, It doesn't
exclude
each other. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And recently you did a competition.
Yes.
In an area in Södertälje. So tell us, like, how was the, tell us behind the scenes, like, how was the process and what you did?
Yeah, it was actually a very great experience to develop one of the proposals for Södertälje, especially because Södertälje was one of our study projects at KTH.
Mm.
So it was kind of, you know, going back home, I don't know. A little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, we had a really great team that we collaborated with. It was Alison Brooks Architects and Lark Landscape Architects.
Yeah.
So that was very interesting because we brought a very different competences into the team and worked on this complex project, because the project was focusing on the Luna block that is currently shopping centers / offices, I think. And Södertälje is aiming to completely transform it because now it's a closed, like, kind of brutalistic block. And they want to open it up, give it back to the city, to the community. And I think this is a very beautiful idea.
Yeah, it matches what you love.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So our approach was to kind of weave back this block into the city through, like, tangible and intangible connections, through, like, physical response to the environment, as well as different activities that might occur there. Like, of course, when you plan, you think these activities are going to happen, but they might be completely different when it actually is built. But when you provide the space for it to happen, it's always I think gonna be beneficial.
Yeah. How Marie, how is it to, like, when you work when you build this kind of a program and proposal, you work with different people of different disciplines. So how do you make your voice heard or your idea implemented with so many people?
Yeah, I agree. It's, you don't want to be like, you want to hear each other and you want to come up with the best solution. I think in my case, usually when it's a new team formed, in the beginning, I'm just observing the dynamics.
Yeah.
I'm not one of the people who acts on the spot. It's more like I need time to adjust and to see what the dynamic is.
Yeah.
And then I'm not afraid to speak up when I feel like I have something to add.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's where it starts, I think, when you
so get. Yeah, so you're more like first observing, collecting data, what is there, and see dynamics, who's like talking more, talking less, the disciplines, and then you play your cards.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel more confident and prepared because I might have some ideas that someone else has more knowledge about. It doesn't mean that my ideas are bad, it just means that that person might be more knowledgeable.
How long have you been working?
It's maybe soon 2.5 years.
2.5 years, yes. So you're still, like, how to say, new in the field. Do you feel, because I hear from a lot of students, myself, me also, I was in this position, like, when we graduate and start work, we feel like we don't know anything. Even, like, maybe after 1 or 2 years, we still, like, keep silent. Maybe you have a good ideas, but when we see, like, a lot of seniors sitting on around the table, we still, like, shy to talk. How is it in your case? Like, you have it, you had it, like.
Yeah, I can totally relate to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because when I just started, I felt like, oh no, but I don't actually know,
like, zero,
what's going on. But then, like, with every task and with every day, I just realized that, oh, but that's what I've been doing before. I know what I'm doing. Yeah. It's just every, I think maybe the first 6 months, it was like every day, like, building up my confidence.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I know it. I mean, I don't know everything. There is a lot of details still for me to learn, but I know how to learn what I need.
Okay.
So it's it's not that you need to be prepared for every situation, for every little detail. Mm. It's more like you need to be aware how you can solve it quickly.
Yeah, I think this helps a lot, that what you said now is that it's more about not you give the final answer.
Yeah.
If you don't have the answer, it's more about like how together we can find a solution, or we can try to find an answer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just if you know the methods, if you know the tools,
yeah,
you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. But was it like a specific moment when you realized, okay, no, but it is like this. I don't need to be silent. Like you start to think different. Or no, it's like just came by time.
I think it came with time and also with diverse tasks that I need to do with like one thing that I've been doing more and more. I feel very confident.
Yeah.
When it's a completely new set,
yeah,
then I need to observe first.
in the competition, how was the discussions? Because competition usually, I don't do a lot of competitions, to be honest, so I don't have so much experience within competition. It's good that you're doing so. I learned from you. Because first, like brainstorming a lot of ideas and then make a decision to move to the next, right? It's something like this?
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
But competition, since it's a very
short
amount of time, it tends to be a bit messy. So you need to keep up with, like, there's many ideas, coming, many possibilities, and you need to like just make decision, go forward.
Mm.
And I think something that was helpful for us, we had the mirror board with all the different progress drawings.
Mm.
So we could always come back and see, oh, we did this decision because that didn't work out.
So no one gets sad.
Yeah, because, you know, when it's, I think we were maybe 8 to 10 people in a team.
Many.
Yeah, so it is quite a big amount of people.
Yeah.
So not everyone is always like, it's impossible to have a, like 2-hour meeting and be focused 100%.
That's true.
So you can just miss out a detail, but you can always go back there and see, okay, yeah, that was discussed, that worked, or that didn't work, and that's why we move forward.
Yeah. Do you get sad when people don't take your idea further?
No, I wouldn't say that I'm too attached to my ideas only. I'm really happy when the project is progressing, and then I feel that we are doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
So
as
it
a
doesn't,
team.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like, oh, my glorious idea is the best. But I mean, it's not always like that.
Okay, maybe I will be rude now, but like, I need to put like be the devil in the conversation. Okay. But like, when people don't take your idea, it means that the idea is not really responding to the challenge or not relevant. How do you think? It's a tough question, huh?
So if I think that...
You don't get sad if your idea will not move further, if they will go with other ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, for you, it's about how the team approach and find the solution. But from other perspective, the devil will say, not me, that your idea is not relevant, so they didn't move further with it. They took another idea.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get my...
Yeah, I think I did.
It's a tricky question.
It could be truth, you know?
Yeah.
My idea can be irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if I really feel that this is an important aspect and we have to focus on it, even if my solution might not be ideal, I would try to bring it up several times that, oh, we need to remember about this.
Yeah.
So it's not that I completely dismiss that all ideas that were not accepted are completely irrelevant.
No.
It's more about maybe the implementation is not exactly, like maybe something is not exactly working out there, but there is an issue that I try to address.
Mm.
And then I need to remember to have pinpoint that this issue needs to be addressed, and if maybe there are better ways.
Yeah.
But it's always like, if you have some initial idea how to address an issue, then people can discuss over it.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Always easier than start from scratch.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe a bad idea is still a good idea.
Yeah, like it's also like, how is a good idea, how does it contribute to the solution? Because in the end, you have a client, they pay you, so you give them, you help them. Yeah, if the idea is not helping them, it's not like a good, just in this like case. But you, do you push a lot for a social sustainability, for like a human friendly design and so on in your projects?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm always like the advocate for social structure.
Yeah.
Like we need to look at people who live there. Who are these people? What do they like? What they don't like? What, if possible, it's not like we always have enough time or budget to like do a very proper research. But like as much as possible to get to know what people like, or like what kind of, for example, if it's a small like centrum, like it's interesting to see what kind of activities happen in there, what kind of events happen in there. At least you get an idea what people living there are interested in. At the same time, it might be a little bit misleading if there are people who have different interests but they just don't have enough opportunities.
Exactly.
So it's not always easy to find common ground.
I think it's a tricky part because I also, like you, advocate for the social aspect in the projects. And sometimes, yes, as you say, it's there are this kind of events, this kind of infrastructure, and we can judge and think people love it. But when we do like a deep research and talk to them, no, maybe they hate it. They don't want it. And that's why it's like sometimes it's tricky to just like read the map or check home pages. It's not like really showing the real community or people.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I don't have an answer how to, like, within a limited amount of time to make it the most efficient. But I think often, I think me personally, I rely on my previous experience or like knowledge or different research papers that we read. We learned about and you just make conclusions based on your experience when you have no time to get the real evidence that this is the truth.
It's part of the game, when it's like super limited time, then you have to use your experience, inspiration project, and do the research. Like if you're not able to talk to people, and it's a bit sad. Sometimes it's so sad that we cannot talk to people.
I agree.
So now you have been working like 2.5 years, and you built like an experience and knowledge and so on. Usually I ask in the podcast, what should architects stop doing? Of course, what you gonna answer now is related to what you have today. Maybe in 10 years I will ask you, you will say another thing, but let's focus about now. What should architects stop doing?
I do think that in relation to our whole conversation today, that we do need to come back to the context, like bring yourself back to the context when you focus on some detail in the project, in a building, then you always like zoom out and like remember the whole picture and then zoom in again. Kind of remember to zoom out and just like see the whole picture and zoom in and like how this small detail works within the bigger picture.
Okay.
I think that is something I find useful when I forget and I bring it back. I need to see the whole picture. I find it really helpful to not forget the overall direction. What are we doing here?
Like the mission of this project.
Yes.
But how do you remind yourself and zoom out? Because sometimes we just like go into details and in AutoCAD, Archicad, and draw and material colors and like into our, because we love what we do, and so we are so much in details. And as you mentioned, we maybe forget the mission. So how do you remind yourself to zoom out and like look at the whole picture?
I think I found a format that works for me.
give me that format.
I really enjoy putting all the information into like one presentation. It doesn't have to be a very nice one, but it's more like all the important points are there.
Okay.
It can be in the form of actual presentation, can be a form of Miro, but just have the most important points collected there and like add more, throughout the time while you work, when you discover more and more. And like when you have it all in one place, mm-hmm. it's easy to come back to.
Ah, so this is like your way of gathering information about the project.
Yes.
And how do you remind yourself to go back and read the information? Like, when do you see, is like you have an alarm or like a reminder? How
yeah,
do
every
you...
hour. I think it happens naturally. Just sometimes you work on some detail and then you just feel tired or like a bit lost.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel the need, okay, now I need to
go back.
Take a break. Mm. And then I just need to zoom out and think over again what I'm doing.
Mm.
So I don't have a reminder on my phone that tells me to.
What if I don't get tired and I keep drawing and drawing and detailing and detailing and just forget about the mission of the project?
Okay. Trying to push it forward. I guess then a reminder mm. will help you, maybe once a day.
Mm.
Yeah, if it's helpful, maybe in the morning you can have a small like 10-minute talk to your team,
mm.
like a recap of what have we done.
Yeah.
Or like if every day is too often, maybe at least once a week you have like a small recap of like each person, what did you work on, or like what do we think about it, what's next.
Yeah.
Like trying to just... Yeah, I think talking to people, talking to your team always helps.
Yeah, yeah. So this is what architects should stop doing, is that to not only focus on details, but they should zoom out also and see the whole picture of...
Yes.
Or the aim of the what they're doing.
Yeah, I believe that's what we need.
Yeah. And do you have to say, when you were studying and... Did you have the same image about how is it to work as an architect, or no? They are completely different two images.
I think I had a little bit of an idea because of the internships that I did. Mm-hmm. But
where you did your internships?
It was back home in my hometown.
Yeah.
We had like it was a requirement for doing like 1 or 2 months internships after third and fourth year.
Yeah.
Of architecture school.
Yeah.
So at least I had a little bit of an idea of what do people do. But at the same time, since I moved to Sweden, I was quite worried about, oh, maybe it's so different here, so I don't know what I will be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did have that fear.
Okay.
It just went away with like, I just started working. I'm like, okay,
that's fine.
Now
I
understand what they're talking about. I understand what they're doing, and I can do this too.
Yeah. What is your like key elements that you make yourself comfortable in the office and learning and part of the team? Because you like have to say, you moved to this country and the new office and so on. Like, how do you, what are the different aspects that you did? So you felt, okay, no, it's going, I'm learning, I'm contributing, I'm part of this.
I would say something that's like just important on a basic level is to like satisfy my basic needs, like eat, sleep, you know.
Oh, you sleep as an architect.
Exactly.
That's good.
I think it's important.
Yeah.
Like have a life, you know, meet your friends, do something that you enjoy that doesn't have to have a purpose. Just you can do it because you enjoy. So when you do this, you feel happier.
Yeah.
And then it helps a lot to just adjust and be productive during the day when you feel happy.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, I think I was quite lucky with the people who I met at the office. I think the atmosphere is very supportive. Whatever I don't know, there is always someone who knows and who would be so much willing to help.
Ah, that's nice.
And I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you never feel like, oh no, now I don't know and I don't, I'm afraid to ask. So that was never the case.
Okay.
So that is, I think, it was a very contributing factor for me.
Yeah. So, because sometimes maybe people think that if you want to, like spend a lot more time in working just to be part of the team, to learn and so on. Like, but in your case, no, like have a good work-life balance instead.
Yep.
Instead of like just putting all your time at in the studio.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just make sure you feel good.
Yeah.
And what? Then you can do more.
Yeah, yeah. What makes you feel good? You told me like meeting friends, doing this volunteering work, support communities, eating, sleeping. What else?
I enjoy learning, so I feel that I always need from time to time new something like new courses or new activities where I could learn small workshops or some kind of update of information. I think that inspires me quite a lot.
Yeah.
I enjoy trying doing different things.
Okay, that's good.
You know, going to a new play or seeing a new movie. I know, playing mini golf, whatever, name it.
Doing podcast.
Exactly.
Is this your new, your first podcast? Or is
yes, it it's my first okay. podcast.
Trying new things, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's no, you're doing good.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And what if you, like, if you get $1 million as a budget, it's a lot of money. What will you do with this money, like more related to what you work with, let's say?
It's an interesting question. And I wonder if that means that this money I can donate or do I have to invest them?
No, you need to work. Like, you need to produce something. You cannot donate.
Okay.
We are like, say, we are donating money for architects, for you as an architect, so you can produce something.
Okay. Then I would be really interested in doing some urban regeneration projects, like taking underused spaces and buildings and transforming them into community spaces, commercial spaces, or whatever this area needs.
Okay. So like more reprogramming.
Yes. I do believe every city has such buildings, which are just underused for a number of different reasons.
Yeah,
and maybe not all of them can be immediately transformed, but you can try and study which ones are.
Okay. Then approved. You will get the money.
Yay!
So before we move to the next section of this episode, tell me, like, you're enjoying your work, you're enjoying your role as an architect. You're like, do you fulfill your purpose and mission as an architect?
I feel for the moment, yes.
Yeah.
I feel that I kind of had a vision of my life all the way until now. I always knew, like, okay, I need to get to architecture school, I need to finish my bachelor's, I need to get to master's in Sweden, I need to finish, I want to find a job, I want to there were very clear steps.
Yes.
And I feel like I got where I was dreaming.
That's nice.
And now it's time to dream new.
Yeah, dream bigger.
But I don't think I have an answer what exactly I dream about. It's more like now I feel like it's time for me to reflect
and have a new dream or dream bigger.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. So what are you looking forward like during this year 2024? Like, we have how many months left? I feel like it's just winter.
Exactly.
Yeah. 10 but, 8 months left.
There are like several directions, and I mostly think there would be outside work, because at work it's a different story, and I feel like I at the moment my friend and I are looking into an idea project that is more connected to my volunteer work, where we are trying to look into vulnerable people in Bangladesh.
Okay.
So maybe possibly trying to connect to our master thesis, but at the same time, we are not just setting the boundaries. So we are quite open to see where it might lead.
Yeah.
So, but at the moment, it's just an idea and we are just starting working with it. And I don't have a particular formulation of what it is.
Yeah.
And the second part is a research project on like sustainable construction management.
Okay.
So I'm pretty interested how can we, from the organizational perspective, make our industry be more sustainable.
It's more like a production or which aspect on the sustainable?
Yeah, more like a production.
Okay. Interesting. But is this like also a side project?
Yeah, it's a part of my second degree that I'm
finish. I'm coming to this because like, how to say, usually we study and this is it, we work. But now you're doing like another master with another focus. Why?
It's a good question. I'm currently finishing the last course of a master program in entrepreneurship and innovation management.
Wow. Wow. This is amazing.
Yeah, it's a completely different
direction.
How
do you find time for... Yeah? Why you study? Why you started to study this?
I think that it was always kind of an interest of mine. Yeah. And it was evolving during the time I was studying architecture. I was maybe for a year working as a self-employed interior designer. Mm. Then I was participating in startup ideas competitions.
Yeah.
So it was just something that always was like somewhere. And I decided that I wanted to enhance this interest. Of course, not everyone takes another master's.
Is it like 1 or 2 years?
1 year.
Okay, yeah. Very good.
And I started it right after the previous one because I thought that it was a perfect time for me since I was finishing during the COVID and I had no idea what was waiting for me, but I couldn't imagine myself just sitting and waiting.
Yeah.
So I wanted to use the time to explore my other interest as well. And I think I'm very happy that I did that.
Good job.
It was a lot of new concepts, a lot of like a completely different side of life, so to say. On the different, because when you work as an architect, you focus on this, all the concepts on social sustainability and so on. But when you when I study this master's, it's more like the organizational.
More like strategical level.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we had the chance to do, of course, it's a simulation, but like project management plan, innovation strategies.
Cool.
And right now we are working on a simulation of a startup.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it is very interesting.
Yeah, raising fund for the startup.
Exactly. We're actually playing a game that is like a marketplace simulation.
Okay.
So we are competing against our group mates. So we have like, I don't know, 8 companies and we compete for the same market shares.
Okay.
So it's
so interesting.
It is very interesting.
Yeah. Do you see that like you can use this knowledge from the second master into your like architecture work?
I think my aim to merge it at some point. So I don't have a very clear vision of how exactly. I hope that maybe my master thesis in like sustainable construction management can somehow like merge it together. But I already started using a little bit of the tools that I learned from project management. I developed a small like early stage project management tool for our office.
Nice.
So it.
Good job.
I do get there, but
It's coming.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know how, but I just keep doing it.
Yeah. Good job. And I think we are already like in the second part of the episode, which is more about like your personal story. First part is about more your like professional architecture and so on, but now more about you and your story. Take us back in time, like where you were born, your family, your childhood. So we follow like your journey.
Yeah, Yeah, I was born and raised in a Siberian city that's called Novosibirsk.
Yeah.
It's pretty far away and it's in Siberia. So I often get a question if I'm, I think that in Sweden it's like summer. And I think I should reply that no.
Okay.
And it's just impossible to get used to cold. You just, when it's cold, you just survive.
Wow.
And then summer comes and you feel like winter never happened, and then winter happens
again.
Yeah, it's like
6 months like this. Yeah. 6 months. How cold were?
I think the coldest I experienced was minus 39.
39?
Yeah.
You're still alive?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the interesting thing is that life never stops, even if it's that cold. Of course, like kids might stay at home, mm-hmm. but when it was minus 36, I had to go to classes, to university. It's never, I mean, it's not a reason to
like,
stop.
And everything was like buses yeah. and city life. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, you don't gather outside, but.
No, but everyone like 10 jackets or something like this.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just keep going.
Yeah. So you born there and grew up there also?
Yes. And I think my childhood was pretty normal, so to say.
Yeah, yeah.
I grew up with my brother. We, in the summers, we often spent summers in our country house. In winters, we studied in a school.
Yeah.
We studied in the same school, and it was a small one.
You're the younger or the first?
I'm the oldest.
Okay, yeah. So you're the big sister.
Exactly.
And they should listen to you. Yeah. Bringing justice.
Absolutely. I think it has connection.
And how did your interest to architecture start?
I think it started from also early age.
Yeah.
Because I'm grateful to my parents who were trying to make me try different things.
Oh, that's nice.
So I did all different types of sports.
Okay.
Gymnastics, tennis, swimming, and it's all,
oh, wow.
it's not like a little bit, but gymnastics I did for like 6 years and it was more professional level. You know, if it was tennis, I also had to compete and so on. I don't think sports are really my cup of tea, so I was never good at it, but.
Why you didn't like what was the thing that you didn't like with the sports?
I think I'm just not good at it, and then I just don't enjoy it that much.
Okay, you don't enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah, you just I do yoga, so that's a bit more.
But yoga doesn't count as a sport.
Exactly, so it's more like physical activity. That's why I like it.
Okay, so your parents tried to show you there.
Yeah, my dad really loved sports, so he thought that maybe I will also like some. Well, I hope I managed to make him proud in other ways.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yes, you did. So yeah, tried different sport, didn't work, and then.
And then in parallel, I started going to different art schools.
Art.
Yeah.
Cool.
As I said, many different things.
Yeah.
It was, you know, English school, art school, all kind of extra activities that
okay,
you can imagine.
Beside your regular school, you attended other. Okay.
Yeah. And it was, I think, grown from there. I was enjoying drawing and I didn't want to drop off from sports. So I was just doing it. And then when it was time to switch to a different age art school, I was, yeah, let's do it.
Mm.
But then I became a teenager. And then I told my parents that I'm never gonna connect my life with drawing ever.
No.
Yes.
That is a bold statement.
Exactly. And I told them that I want to drop off that last art school.
Okay.
But they convinced me that it's a good idea to just finish
continue.
A year.
Just
finish this year and see what happens later.
Okay.
So I finished, I got my grades and I was like, yeah, now I'm done. And then I had a nice summer and coming back to school, I was like, oh, but I have to do something, right?
How old,
I think it was 14.
Okay, yeah.
So that's when I was like, kind of feeling, because all my friends would like go out, have fun, and I always had this art school. You know, it was always
okay. Now I understand. Like now I understand why. Okay, so it was like a kind of military service you need to do. Yes. Okay. So came back from the summer and started to.
And
question.
Then I just applied for the next one. I was like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I actually like it.
Yeah, and your parents are happy also.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, finally she will not drop off something.
And then I realized that it's not because my parents take me there, it's because I like it.
And yeah, the second round. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And what kind of art you were drawing? What did you draw?
I think in the first, when it was like for small kids, it was all kind of like, you know, animals, trees and so on. We even went to a trip to France.
Really?
Like on an art trip to France.
Fancy.
Yeah, it was actually scary because I was like 11.
What?
I was 11 years old.
And 11. Yeah. It's too young, no? Yeah, for like an art trip to Paris, to France. Like, this is big, no?
I think so. But it kind of, I think it was a very memorable trip because that's when it was my first time in Europe. And then I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with France. But nice. At the same time, I was calling my parents and saying that I don't understand, not Swedish or not Swedish. Oh, my God. French or English.
And maybe you still call your parents and say, I don't understand Swedish.
I do.
You do? I just cut you there, huh? Okay, anyway, back to France. Okay, so.
So we were just like walking around the city and drawing different
parts
of it.
It's like urban sketchers.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
So I think it was very memorable and very important in my life.
Yeah. So art school and then?
And then architecture school, just consequently.
Okay, so when you finish art school, you say, okay, now it's time to decide like for the university, right?
Yes.
And it was like architecture.
I think back home, it's very common to go to university straight after your high school.
Yeah.
So that's why you had to decide.
That's true.
But actually, I was choosing between IT and architecture school.
IT and architecture?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very unexpected choice.
Yeah, right.
I obviously felt more.
That's
like
good. Yeah. And was it in the same city?
Yes.
Okay, so you have cool.
The city where I'm from, it's quite big. It's,
what was the name you told me?
Novosibirsk.
Yeah.
And it has 1.8 million people.
Oh, it's big. That's a lot of people, no?
It's like third biggest city in Russia.
Ah, wow.
So it's
big,
very big. So we have like one of the best architecture schools. You know, there is like European part and then there is Asian part and Asian part of Russia.
Yeah. And how you did your bachelor, was it like, is it 5 or 3 years?
5 years.
Oh my God.
Oh, it was a very long
time. It's crazy. Like 5 years of bachelor. Like, do you get a job after the bachelor or no? You need to do a master as an architect.
You can get a job after the bachelor.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. I think they, at some point, were changing regulations. So maybe you need masters for certain titles, but I'm not up to date with that information anymore.
Yeah. And how come that you moved to Sweden? Like, what was the reason?
Since that trip to France, I really wanted to study in Europe, in one of the European universities. And after I got an architecture school, it was obviously one of the architecture schools.
Mm, yeah, makes sense.
But then I met my boyfriend, who is from Sweden.
Wow. Where did you meet?
We met in Italy.
So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a surprise trip from our parents to our class. That's I met my boyfriend. And I think for many years people thought he was Italian, but because we met in Italy, and whenever I told my friends, like, oh, it's him, and like, oh, he's Italian, right? I'm like, no.
Shout out to him. But he doesn't look like a Swedish, or?
He's okay. Swedish. Like, we even did DNA test, I think, like 94% or something.
What is his name? We do a shout out.
His name is Daniel.
Daniel, shout out to Daniel. Yeah. In which Italian city you met?
It's a little bit difficult because it was a cruise ship. So.
Okay, so it's on water.
Yeah, it was from Venice, maybe we can say Venice.
It's a beautiful city. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. So that was a very another important trip in my life where I met my boyfriend, and it was almost 11 years ago, and we are still together.
Good job. So it's like all the trips you do with like a big mission and purpose, you know, like
it somehow turns out to be.
Yeah. So you met Daniel, and then you went back home. He went back home.
Yes.
And then you decide to move to an architecture school to study architecture in Sweden.
Yeah, but before that, I finished my bachelor's in Russia, and yes, then I moved to study in Sweden because
you moved to architecture or to Daniel.
Both.
Yeah.
So that kind of defined why I'm in Sweden, not in another European country.
Yeah, makes sense now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you joined KTH, best school ever, no?
Absolutely. But it is a very good architecture.
It's fun. I love it. It's like 2 years I did my master. I really enjoyed like the people, organization, city. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think my experience, I really loved it. It was fun, but since it was like mostly under COVID, it was a bit of a different experience.
Tell me, how was it?
It was hectic in the beginning because everyone had to adjust to, you know, we had to work in groups.
Yeah.
How do you do it online? So that was a big adjustment to do. So it was pretty challenging and then maybe a bit lonely sometimes because when you sit in the studio, you can just talk to your classmate. If you are stuck, even if you do your own projects, you just can,
chit-chat.
Friend,
can
we talk about it? Because I'm a little bit unsure where I'm going here. Yeah. But then like with online calls, it became too formal. Mm. Like when you're like, okay, now this time let's have a call.
Yeah.
It's a different environment and we were not used to it.
No.
So it was challenging. But at the same time, I feel it kind of opened up us for this possibility to work in online. In I think our field is very conservative, so it was a big push for like trying it, although it's still much better to collaborate and work in person. But there are some parts that it's totally okay to do online.
Or like
sometimes you don't have to travel for 1 hour to have like 1 hour meeting.
No, right.
You can just have a call.
Yeah, that's true. Did you did you learn, like, because you did the bachelor and it was a lot of like studio work, like with the paper and colors and like physical. How was it when you did it online? Did you enjoy it? Did you learn? Is it the same, like, of course not the same experience, but I mean like the same joy? It's a philosophical question.
Yeah, exactly. I think in the end of the day, it was enjoyable, and we managed to meet, like, if I worked in a group, we would meet our own groups and like each other's homes and work together. But it was still important to meet and to sketch together, to brainstorm, to, I don't know, sit and just struggle together.
Suffer.
Yeah. And during the master thesis, it was also mostly online. We made a habit of like having a call every morning so that we make sure both of us start working.
Nice.
And we would just, you know, ask how are you feeling today, or like
you and Lemia.
Yeah.
Okay. Shout out to her also.
Yes. Yeah. So it was very nice and you know, encouraging in the morning, and then we would just mute and like the Zoom would be on, and then if you feel like you need a talk, you just unmute and we talk.
Okay.
So
cool.
That kind of.
Like a live.
And it took us a year to, you know, from the first Zoom start to like starting the thesis when we discovered how we can make it work. So it was a year, a process.
When you graduate, did you had like a party or something or not? That was also on Zoom.
We actually, I think Daniel, Patrick, and Francesca made the rose giving ceremony anyway, but only for our small design.
That's nice.
It was very nice. We were still, you know, outside in the courtyard of KDH. Everyone had to, you know, stay distance, but we at least, you know, got pictures together.
That's nice, no?
It was very nice.
Cool. And how did you like started to get into society here and be active and so on?
I think after I moved to Sweden, I realized that, I'm living in the capital.
And yeah.
Whatever happens, whatever events, I can just go there.
Yeah, it's big.
You know, I come from like middle of nowhere. Nothing really happens there. Like every time I see like, this conference sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, so far away. So I cannot go there. But all of a sudden I discovered, I can actually choose whatever and go.
Mm.
And I would go alone because my boyfriend Daniel and I don't have always similar interests. So I would, some events were not interesting for him. So I would just go by myself. I didn't have so many friends. I mean, I just moved, so I didn't really know what to do. So that's how I started. And then I think Swedish classes were also helpful to finding other people who struggle, the same struggle.
Yeah.
And then I started studying at KTH. Then you obviously find more like-minded people. So I believe different activities that you can engage and that would kind of put you together with other people who feel the same or want the same or interested in the same. Always good to start off.
It's a good, really good, tactic that you did, is like involving or attending different events, being part of different communities, like exploring the city. Because like you're in the capital city, you know, and it's, everything is happening here, like from football to movies to entertainment to knowledge sharing events. So like I'm glad that you took opportunity of the city. And also like following you on Instagram, I see like you attending this event, you go to this theater. It's good that you're like active in your city.
Yeah, I would say I'm also happy that sometimes I forget that that's what I like doing, but I bring it back to my life and, you know, go to a new theater where I have never been.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not very familiar with the local like, culture in terms of plays because I don't know the stories from childhood.
No.
But at the same time, I can learn a new story. I can look at the new building. I can just share this experience with someone with who I'm going to.
Cool.
So that is, I think, very inspiring, and I enjoy having these like small moments in life.
That's good. How do you keep work-life balance? Because you're so passionate. You love your work. You love the other volunteering and activities you do. Where is the boundary and limit in between them?
I think it has to do with like recognizing what you feel, and if you feel you can do it and being able to communicate. Like when I have so many different tasks, I have to prioritize. And in most of the cases, of course, job is important and it goes first because that's very important. It pays my check, but also I feel it is very important for me.
Yeah.
So when it's work time, I focus on that and don't focus on, I just kind of put aside the rest of the things. Then when it's outside working time, then I can go a little bit, be more flexible.
Yeah.
And if I feel that, today I don't manage, like for example, now when I study at the same time, I say like, okay, we have deadline in 2 days.
Yeah.
So today I cannot do it because I'm busy. And mostly everyone understands because everyone has their life and it's just okay to say today is not working for me.
No.
or I will do it tomorrow because today I don't feel well, or like today I feel like I need a break.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So trying to recognize what's possible for you at the moment and communicate.
Communication, yeah.
Like, because I'm also a very responsible person, so I would never do...
Just like leave it like...
Exactly. Yeah. I would never, like if it's a group work, I'm going to do what I need to do, it doesn't have to be done at this exact moment. It has to be done by certain time.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's always possible to communicate and try to come up with a solution that works for everyone.
Communication is a key to solve a problem or to a problem. Like if you don't communicate or miscommunicate, then it's a problem.
Exactly.
Or if you're good in communication and starting early, so you can kind of solve a problem.
So don't forget to let other people know.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel tired, like, of, like, you ask yourself, oh, okay, why I'm doing this, a lot of volunteering work, or why I'm staying a lot in the office, or why I'm doing this? Like, this kind of you question yourself moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It happens. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel like, oh, why did they even... involve myself into all of this. Mm. And I think for me, it helps to talk to Daniel. Mm. Like he's always like his biggest cheerleader. For me, he's like
awesome.
Always like, yeah,
that's awesome.
You should do it. And then it helps for me to just talk through like, oh, I'm doing this and that. I'm a bit unsure what's going on.
Yeah.
And it just might mean that I'm tired at this moment and I need a break. So, yeah, but of course, you can't do everything and you have to prioritize what's more interesting or more important. Yeah, so there are things that I say no to just because this is not a good time.
It's good that you say no.
Yeah,
that's important.
I'm still learning.
Yeah, of course, it's like always like a learning journey, but it's good that you started at least with... with the idea of saying no. And how does your like daily routine look like? What time you wake up and like what do? You have thousands of things.
So we are currently in between the apartments. We are moving from Solna to Hagastaden.
Yeah.
To one of the wooden houses.
Nice.
And we have already seen it and it's very nice and we are very excited. And I still have like 1.5 weeks of long distance traveling.
Okay, yeah. Not so many days.
No. Mm. But at the moment, I usually wake up around 6.
Okay, early.
Because, because my morning routine is pretty long. And it's not only because I can't really make it shorter, but also because I enjoy. It's just how I start my day. I enjoy doing like, you know, several steps treatment on my skin. I enjoy.
Okay.
I just enjoy. It's like a sort of morning rituals that
like
I do.
Like you put this mask or something? Or what do you do?
I mean.
Teachers, we also want to be like shining and something. Like look good. And
I think I have like 3 steps. Facial routine.
Okay.
First is it's like washing your face and then you put some
with only water or with the
in the morning it's only water.
Yeah.
Then we put some serum.
What is serum? teach us.
I don't think I can properly explain, but it's like a water-based liquid that they have like different properties and depending on your skin type, you need to choose what you need.
Yeah.
But I think at the moment I have something like moisturizing because it's been a bit dry during the winter because of the radiators.
Yeah. How do you, it's like liquid, right? Like you wash your face or?
You wash your face and then you put this liquid serum and then it dries a little bit and then you put cream, like moisturizing cream and then it's kind of.
How long you wait with this, like, the process?
It's, I don't know, 5 minutes, 7 minutes.
Oh, not so long.
Yeah, but it's only, you know, facial routine and if I need to fix my hair, it takes some time. Then also I do some makeup and it just makes me feel better, makes me wake, gradually waking up and just I feel that it makes me more confident in my day and prepared for the day.
Cool. So I thought like it's like a 3 hours of routine, but no, it's like not that. So no. Big time, no.
No. Okay. An important part of it is I really enjoy styles, and like clothing, like accessories and so on. So it's really important for me to find the perfect set, the perfect combination for the mood. for the day, and then I feel like the day starts perfectly. Yeah.
You also like have I have nothing to wear.
It happens. Maybe my mood doesn't suit any, but usually it works out.
Okay, so how long is it? 1 hour of preparation or more?
Between 1 and 2 hours. That's a very long time.
That's good. So when you're ready, what do? You go.
Then it's a walk to the train, and then it's like a bit over than a half an hour train ride, and I usually study or work or prepare for the podcast, depending what what my day look like.
Yeah.
So I try not to like waste that time, because very in the good. Morning I already feel ready for starting.
Are you more like a morning person, like a productive in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
I think so. Well, I can be productive at any time, but
but like the most is in the morning.
Nice. Yeah. So then I arrive to work, and then my work days looking sometimes the same, sometimes different. It can be whole day working at the computer. It can be meetings. It can be like preparations for a workshop. It can be quite various, but most of the time, I would say I'm at my desk and I'm designing something.
And like you eat lunch at the office?
Yeah, most of the time.
Good. Are you good in preparing food?
I'm good at preparing food, but I'm very good at forgetting food at home as well.
No.
It's just, I really need a note on my door.
Take
before
your lunchbox. You forget? Okay. Why?
At least once a week. I just.
No.
It can be like several days in a row. I just leave because I'm ready to go.
So happy to that you just like.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then after work, I usually it kind of varies. It can be meeting with friends if it's like closer to the end of the week, or just going home, making dinner together, and watching a movie, or. It can be the day for the meeting with ASF.
Yeah, yeah.
It can be the day for meeting with studies. So it usually varies, but it may be like 1 or 2 hours a day when I study or or work with something else.
Yeah. And do you sleep early or no? Like, because you wake up kind of early.
Yeah, I think at around 10, I try to stop.
That's good.
Whatever is going on.
Yeah.
Well, it might be sometimes there is an interest in serious and I cannot stop.
but like aiming for then like an early bedtime.
Yeah. I mean, I guess 10 is early and not like going to sleep at like, 10. It's more like start thinking.
Slowly,
about going.
Ah, start to think. But like do you need your like 7-8 hours of sleep so you feel energetic and... no, you can do it if you sleep 5 or 6 hours.
No, if I don't sleep enough, you don't want to meet me. No, it's not that bad, but like 7-8 hours a day, but it still is not really enough. But with my schedule, I cannot manage more sleep.
No.
But instead, it's really important for me to have once a week a day when I can sleep.
Yeah, like charge.
Until I can't sleep
nobody
anymore.
Leave like, me alone.
I mean, I'm not a teenager anymore, but it can be 13 hours.
What?
Yes.
This is crazy.
Just, I need such a day. Like, at least a couple of times a month. I just...
Like to recharge, yeah. No, that's interesting and cool to know more like about how you do you. Because you're productive, you're part of different activities. And I was thinking like how... Does she do it? Now, like, I kind of know. Marie, well, like, in 100 years from now, what do you want people to read about you, associate you, your name with? Like, what do you want to leave?
I think it's a very deep question.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to reply because I don't feel like I'm imagining myself like having my only goal in life to become a famous architect.
Mm.
I feel that maybe in 100 years I would like a family looking into the history and seeing like, oh, at this like 100 years ago, my grand-grandma could go to this women's center and get an education and improve the life for the whole family. And that's where like our living conditions turned to the better. And maybe they would find that I was a part of the team working on that community center, or like women's center.
Cool. Interesting.
So yeah, I would, it would, it makes me feel warm thinking that someone's family life will get better.
Let's focus more on like a family.
Yeah.
Cool. And now we are in the last part of this episode, and it's about messaging. You send messages. So what is first question is about you send the message to yourself.
Maybe I would like to send myself a message that I'm doing good and it's gonna be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That I, of course, I'm sometimes afraid when I start something, as everyone is afraid, but I think it's important to remember that it's just gonna be okay.
Yeah. No, you're really doing good. And I'm very happy to know you and also like to work in the same field as you do. So you're inspiring. So no, you're doing good.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I can say the same about you. It's very inspiring, your way, how you got here.
Thank you. And the next message is going to be to our listeners. So three takeaway messages to them.
I think I would like them to remember to act with empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Try to listen to each other. Try to understand, like put yourself on someone else's place. Mm. Just be more kind
to
each other.
Mm.
And at the same time, collaborate, like be open to talk to new people, to engage with new people, because that's how we can achieve, at least it's my personal belief, that we can achieve better results, we can make better cities, better lives if we work together.
True.
And the last one, maybe to take care of yourself. Just make sure you feel happy, make sure you feel good.
Yeah, so be kind and collaborate together and take care of yourself.
Yes.
Cool. We should write in the episode description all like these things you use, you know, like for keeping face, the one in the morning routine. People might ask you, huh?
Okay, I'm happy to answer this question.
And the last question in this episode is about you asking it to us. I don't have more questions now. The last question is you asking.
I think I would like everyone to think how can you make a small step today or make a small action today that would make our cities more just or more inclusive for everyone.
Cool. Good question. And Marie, thank you so much for coming, for inspiring us, for a good conversation and a fun conversation. So keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. I was really happy to be here.